I've changed. Welcome, everyone. I'm going to turn it over to
Well, I want to welcome you to Milk Creek, and we're going to have a more formal welcome in a little bit from Laura, and she'll tell you all the great things that we do here, and we can take a little tour around the building itself if we have time and interest. I think it'd be great for you to see this co-joined facility that has a library, a senior center, and a recreational facility attached together. It was, as some of you may remember, it was not an easy accomplishment to mush all these services into a small site like we had here at Milk Creek. We formerly had about a 13,000 square foot library. There was about a 15,000 or less square foot recreation facility. Smooshing all of those together and adding one more service level, the seniors, which you found as you tried to park today, the challenge that that creates at certain hours of the day, mostly around lunch when they're serving a lunch here, it makes a bit of a complicated situation, as well as the meeting room. So the meeting room space in Milk Creek is at a premium, and this room is reserved a lot, and it's difficult for us to manage that before we can talk to us more about that. So again, I wanted to welcome you to board meeting for the month of June, and I think that's about it. So we move on to the action items of the approval of minutes.
All right.
We have a quorum, so.
We have a quorum. So, anybody want to make a motion? Or not the action?
Well, move the motion to approve last May 22nd, board meeting.
Second.
Okay. All in
favor? Aye.
Good.
Next, public comments.
I see Steve is here, but I think you have no comment at the moment.
True.
Okay, and then I don't know if we have anyone online that would like to comment.
I haven't seen.
If anybody wants to raise their hand, they're welcome to add in that. A couple callers, it looks like, but. Okay.
Hi. I just want to make sure that you guys can know that I'm here. It's Sandra.
Oh, hi, Sandra. I thought you were in Spain.
Hi. I was, and then I came back. And I'm here.
Oh, great. I'm so glad you're able to join today. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah.
Feel free to chime in anytime you feel like it.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. I don't have any correspondence. I've been, to full disclosure, so I've been away from the office for the last couple weeks, taking care of some family health concerns in California. So just got back this weekend, looked through my mail. I didn't see anything, any correspondence that would necessitate the board's attention at this time. So I said that. I don't know if there's any other correspondence that you have received or there's any other correspondence that we've got that would really rise to the level of attention for the board. So that's it.
All right. So we're on to new business.
Well, perfect.
There we go.
What's that? Oh, and Bill's on, too. Okay, great. Hey, thanks, Bill. Hope your children are feeling better.
Me, too.
I hope you're feeling okay.
I am. I'm sitting out in the car, so it's a little bit quiet right now, but unfortunately, I'm probably going to have to leave fairly soon.
Okay, that's fine. Well, actually, we're going to go through introduction and welcome to Milk Creek Ranch, and we really don't get into anything of any consequence until after that. So you're free to leave at any time, Bill.
Okay, I appreciate it.
Thank you.
So I'm going to turn the time over to Laura. She can formally welcome us to this wonderful space.
So I haven't been around enough meeting out to know where I'm supposed to be or you're at.
I don't want to be anywhere. That's the one, so I would probably go back.
Back? Okay.
Yeah, but I got to be.
That's probably good.
Just so they're not seeing your back.
Does this work? I can't.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm Laura Renshaw. It's my privilege to serve here as the manager of Mill Creek Ranch. I've been here for just under a year and a half. This building has been here for 11 years. We just celebrated our 10-year anniversary last spring. And it's a beautiful building and a great place to visit. So moving on. So as Jim mentioned, we do have three agencies in one building, and that creates unique challenges
It's a busy place. We get folks who say they love the one stop. They can come to an exercise class and pick up their lunch if they're a senior and then come and get their books. So it does create the parking challenges. So we try to recommend best times to come when it's not so congested, but around the middle of the day right now is at its most. We encourage our staff to park along the street just to free up any space we can. We have around 125 items in our collection. I put a note on here to notice the river. Are we going to do a tour right after this or at the end? Right after this?
We can do it at the end.
Okay. So the river, the way you see in the picture is our children's area with this really cool artistic tree. And the reason I love this, this is a unique feature of the building. What you see with those windows is the track of the rec center. So when you're upstairs walking on the track, you can look down into the library, into either the program room or into the children's area. So it's a really neat thing. But the river is actually meant to mimic Mill Creek. So when you enter the library, both the carpet, the design on the carpet, as well as the ceiling, I think it's called a river, but, you know, really it's a creek. Some other unique features of our branch, well, we have a book club collection, so there's three book club collections in the library system, and we're so glad to have one of those. It's just a great way to recommend excellent books that are kind of vetted that people can check out as individuals for their book club. Our meeting room, the one you're sitting in right now, very high because it's not just used by the library, but it's also shared by the senior center. Rec center doesn't really use it, although they could if they wanted to. That means this room is in use all the time, more so, I think, than in other rooms. And then finally, we have some really beautiful places to sit and read. This location of this library and the way the windows are makes it really nice. Next slide, please. So we're averaging around 15,000 visitors a month. We have lots of seniors because of the senior center, but we're in really close proximity to our middle school. So we also get a lot of teenagers in the afternoon, and that creates some challenges with balancing the noise level and the activity level. And we try to have programs to kind of redirect all that energy, but it is an ongoing challenge. We have a great teen librarian who's really getting some positive energy around our teens and a new teen advisory board, as well as a lot of other teen programming that's going really well. We're super busy right now with summer reading and lots of families coming in to participate. We're also finding a lot of adults don't realize that this is an all-ages program. So they're delighted to find out that they can do it too. We're happy to tell them about it. This branch also has a very robust support of volunteers. So some branches will take a couple volunteers here and there. We have 20. We said we were going to cap it. We keep saying we're going to cap it, and then somebody will come in that wants to help, and our volunteer coordinators will go, we couldn't say no. They're such an awesome person. This is a person that has their library degree, and they just want to volunteer. So we are it helps support what we do. Our librarians are really good at figuring out how to delegate some of their preparation for crafts and things like that, have our volunteers help. And then I mentioned the teen advisory board. This picture is just a young patron who completed his 1,000 books before kindergarten. Super proud with his grandpa. Next slide. Okay, so some of our programs, we have a lot of programs here that are regular ongoing programs. We have three book clubs that meet every single month. One is a cookbook club that's going to meet tonight. And then two different times of adult book clubs. Actually, four, because we just added a teen one. So we have a whole community of readers here. We're doing four story times a week. We do it in this room. We sometimes hit capacity of this room at 100 people in this room. So it's going really well. We have an excellent story time librarian, and our community loves her. So the word gets out. Everybody comes to story. We have, for younger kids, our Lego club has also grown and thrived. It used to be just 10 to 12 kids, maybe during the pandemic. Now we're up to 40 and 50 kids in this room. Thank goodness it's big enough for all that.
We have all the programming routines. And then another thing that's unique about our branch is that we have a local artist on display every month. So you'll see that out in the branch. And the, what's pictured here is we have a monthly art reception to receive that artist and celebrate them. And then with our collection, I mean, our collection is the driving force behind what gets people here. So we had 728,000 certs last year. And so far this year, as of April, 225,000 certs from this library. Next slide. Thanks, Emily. Finally, all this is possible with our amazing staff. We have 19 staff members, so we have 5 shelters, 5 customer service folks, and 5 librarians, a library assistant manager, and 2 circulation supervisors. 3 of our staff members have worked here for a really long time, more than 20 years. So they were in the old building, and they've carried over to the new building. And finally, we all love working here. It's a great branch. So I've worked at the South Jordan branch, the Glidmore branch, Smith before it closed, and now this one. And before that, as a substitute librarian, I worked at all the branches. And so I love Mill Creek, and I'm just really, really glad to be the manager here. Any questions, comments?
Comment? Yeah, you guys are my library, and I love you. Hey, Garrett. Down here, and I get my books, and I sit by the fireplace.
Yeah.
All the senior citizens.
Yeah.
Of course.
So some of that one-stop shopping.
Yeah.
The fireplace area is one of those beautiful places to sit. Something about the layout of having that offset to the side.
In the winter.
Right. There's not kids running around. Kids don't really make their way over that area, so it works really well for adults.
Well,
yes.
This was my library growing up, too. But, you mentioned parking. You mentioned sharing space with other agencies. Are there any other challenges you're facing?
I mean, I think
Kanye cannot. Because of voting
location. So normally there's an exercise class in here. Monday, the senior center has this room allocated to them Monday, Wednesday, Friday morning. And they used to have it also Tuesday, Thursday afternoon. So there's times when we might want to do a program in here and can't. So we have a story time room. That's a staff area that it could be used for a story time, but it's half the size of this one. So we're doing one of our story times happens there, and it overflows out into the kids' area, and it's really too tight. So it's that kind of a challenge. And then, yeah, with the parking, we get complaints from people about the parking. The other thing that happens because of the 3 agencies in the building, you know, it says in huge letters on the building, library. Mm-hmm. So this side says community center, and on this side under the library it says community center. But there's a lot of people that go into the library. So whatever their experience is in the building, they might come in and go to that desk, and maybe somebody doesn't answer their question, and they go, I went to the library, and they didn't do whatever, and we go, we didn't, that wasn't us, we didn't know about it. So that can sometimes be a challenge, too. We have a lot of extra communication that we have to do with the other building managers and the other staff of the building.
And Steve, to amplify that comment, I think early on, particularly, as we had a library that's open to everyone, everyone was welcome, had a space that would accommodate all comers, but the recreation sort of side, it was a fee to get in, so it was a charge to enter that side of the house. And then for the senior side, you had to be 55 and over, so a 30-year-old couldn't go and use, if they were doing a craft or they were doing pottery or whatever, they couldn't go over there. So the public didn't understand, hey, this is a county community center. Why can't I use everything for free? The library is free. Why can't I use the gymnasium and the exercise equipment to pay for that? Why can't I go into that space? So there was a lot of navigation and a lot of negotiation around where you can overlap services and do joint programming and so forth. And I think that's been resolved a little bit, but people still, I think, are a little testier. Why do I have to pay over there?
Yeah. I mean, so we need to know what the senior center programs are because somebody might wander into a library and say, I'm here for this presenter that's talking on a topic. And we go, I don't know if we can have that. So we're in tune with what they're doing.
tinkering with that. They had people. We had a guy that came. We were doing a blood drive. The library was part of sponsoring the blood drive. It's happening in this room. Well, so he was a little confused about what he was here for. So he said, I'm here for the COVID test. Anyway, he figured out where he was supposed to be, but I thought maybe he's supposed to be over there. But ultimately, figured out he needed to be in here.
And then these shared spaces are problematic at times. Such as the meeting room, but the lobby area as well. Who gets to use that? What type of activity can happen in there? Is there demonstrations, if you're having a protest or whatever it might be, is that appropriate for that space? And, you know, just navigating some of those
right. Well, and with the discussion about adding Sunday hours, it would be a challenge in this building because with the way the security is for the building, so the rec center is accessible. When you come in, you can kind of wander back into their space. There's not anything that prevents you from doing that. So if we were open and they weren't, it doesn't work. So not to say that it couldn't be worked out, but it means working it out with two other agents.
And then finally, I'd say representing Leslie, who's not here today, but just cost sharing. You know, when you have to replace the HVAC, do you have a budget for it? Do you have the budget for it? How do you work together to align all of the resources so you can accomplish repaving the parking lot? You've got to do, you know, some other type of maintenance. How do you best accomplish that? So it takes a lot of communication. So.
We recently replaced these three spaces in here. And so that cost is shared between the three agents. Even though the rec center doesn't use this room, that's what the current agreement is. So I think it was $2,000 a piece. We just fell off.
Great.
It'd be tricky with your library budget being
separate.
Siloed.
Yes.
Library purposes and sharing.
Correct. Yeah.
So tour at the end?
No, I'd like to do it now. And one of the reasons I think it's important is we think about the display policy amendments.
Okay.
What are we really talking about as far as displays? What material selection, what materials are offered? I just think it'd be good for the board to get a sense of that before we enter into a discussion around any changes that we might consider. So can we go?
I wondered if we might want to go out that way.
Yeah.
We need a shared area.
Yeah.
And there's actually two. We maintain a bulletin board here and up here and in the library. We have three bulletin board areas.
And the bulletin board policy is different than display policy, which is different than the art policy as well. So they're all separate kind of policies. The bulletin board policy, you know, we discourage people from posting, hey, babysitting needed or whatever people publicly think would be appropriate there. We try to stick to community notices and things that are relevant to activities within the building, within our system, or the other agencies. Right.
Do you
want to
leave the
tour? I'd be happy to leave the tour.
Jim, something.
Yeah.
Will someone be here?
Yeah, we'll have a couple of staff stay. So
yeah.
leave all your stuff here.
Okay, cool.
Everyone online, a nice little tour of the space. Thank you, Laura. And I'm going to turn the time over to. Oh, Kara's here. Behind you.
It's going to be for Vanna.
Okay.
Okay, so my name is Kara Pearson, and I am in charge of the Library of Things. So the telescopes, hotspots, Chromebooks. So as you guys probably know, we've just started rolling out the GoPros. So I'm going to have Chris Wigner hold it for me. and so these GoPros have just been taken to all the libraries. There's only one per library, just so you know. So one per branch. They are a 7-day checkout. And right now the staff is just kind of getting familiar with it, testing it out, just so that when patrons come up and have questions, they can answer it, hopefully. So the GoPros do not come with the SD cards. We just thought that would be kind of problematic. So the library admin did approve selling SD cards, so at the cert desk. So
when someone checks that, they can buy
one. Yeah, if they need
to. They can use their own, they can buy one, right. So they can go to Office Max. Is there
yeah.
Anyway, they should go somewhere.
That's fine. So these are actually going to be available to the public July 3rd, and that's when they're going to be on our website. We're not going to do a lot of publicity because there's only one per branch, so it might drive the holds crazy if we put a ton of public, marketing. So let's see. So I kind of wanted to show the kit. So the GoPro's in here with the cord. And then I don't know how familiar you guys are, but these are all the mounts and the screws and stuff that you can use for the different. It was quite the process trying to figure out how to label these. They're really tiny, so we'll see how it goes. But also in here, we have some really good, maybe I'll just show you guys. So there's this installation guide. So it has like all the activities and like what mounts and stuff and screws you use to do each activity. So it makes it really simple. And then there's some troubleshooting on the back. And then this one's just like a quick start guide. And we have some really good, there's a really good video that people can use to know how to use it. So we try to make it as simple as we can for the public and try and answer all their questions so that to take some burden off the staff. So I don't know, that's kind of it. Do you guys have any questions or comments?
Are you going to have a waiting list for it? Oops.
You can put it on hold, yeah. So, but that's why we're not promoting it too heavily. we don't want 500 holds, like 18. So we'll see how it goes, and maybe in a few months see if we need to buy more. I don't know, Krista. The money. She has the money.
We're
going
to see how these go. This is the same for us. We want to make sure that we can sustain these, and also support people, and they're not frustrated by this. So. Yep. We gave them lots of options. They can wear hiking. They can go snorkeling with it. So lots of different options like that.
It does go down to 33 feet of water.
Yeah, so can fill lots of requests for these. So this is just kind of, we're trying these out. And we hope that people love them. And so I just had a question about how things are held when things like this or telescopes or whatever are broken or parts come back in the machine. Like, how does that work?
Yeah, they send in a case ticket, so it comes straight to me, and then I have a bunch of parts that I've bought. So, and then we also have one person at each branch that is over these collections, so hopefully they can fix it. If they can't, then they contact me. And so, yeah.
And they're charged if they're not returned. So the circulation, like if they're missing something, they can try to contact the patron and say, hey, you're missing four screws or whatever. Could you bring those back? There's a nominal charge for those. I think we have it like a couple dollars, depending on what it is. And if the whole kit goes lost, they would get charged for the whole item. You explain that all when they check out, kind of the cost of it and how to return it and how to use it and kind of go over everything before they agree to check it.
And these kits are pretty expensive, just so we'll see how.
Well, and just like telescopes, we were concerned about the same thing. They're probably going to take them, they're going to break them, they're just going to do damage. But we've really seen that they take care of them for the most part.
Yeah.
I mean, clearly sometimes something gets lost in burden. But as long as they know that this is going to do it, you're okay with it. But making them available to the public has been such a wonderful service that it really outweighs all these other concerns that we've had. And we've had really good success, I think, with most of the things that we checked out that they don't go missing, that people do take care of them.
Yeah.
And that's something that the public really wants. That's the main thing, to see that demand there. And it's not dissimilar, as we've talked about, it creates spaces, making things available to the public that they may not be able to afford themselves. Or just like with sewing machines, you may not want to buy your own sewing machine. Come to the library and use that. And that's the way books originally evolved, right, was that there was a library that housed these expensive items, and then you lent them out, and then you return them, and someone else could borrow them. So this is the same kind of concept building on that service to the public.
We also have, like, lots of patron stories where they're like, I was interested in a telescope, but I wasn't sure if I wanted to commit to it or my kids would actually use it. Checked it out a couple times in the library. When we bought our own, we're so right. excited.
And some have taken them on long trips
yeah.
in yeah. you know, southern Utah and loved it and came back and was just, like, yeah. so grateful. Yeah.
Very well received.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hi. I just have a clarifying question. This is Sandra again.
Sandra.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
I just wanted to know, like, if they don't return the GoPro, are they, like, how much are they charged? How much would a patron be charged for it?
The whole kit together is, if they don't bring back the whole kit, it's $500. So it is a lot. It's the telescopes.
Okay.
Telescopes are about 435 or something like that, so in comparison.
Okay.
And Chromebooks are about 535.
So replacement.
Okay.
What's
yeah, I mean, I think it's I think it's great. What I see as a difference between the GoPros and the other equipment is that GoPros are actually really tiny. Because they are just you know, they just require a little more awareness, I guess, like just making, and especially because people take them on trips and things like that. So just making sure that the patrons understand that they would be responsible for that cost and, you know, and I don't have an issue. I think it's great that the policies are there. Because my other thought was also to try to discourage people who might, you know, just get them and not ever bring them back, you know, for whatever reason. Thank you.
So with your library things, they who can check them out, it has to be a library card in good standing, adult, and it can't. So no kids' cards, no temporary cards check out these items. So it's someone that we have a relationship with already, kind of, I guess they have mm-hmm. a card with us, and they're in good standing. So it's not, they okay. can't put it into the system. So we haven't had really any major issues with the telescopes. So I feel like it would kind of be similar. The tech is like, this is a kind of higher technology. So we're hoping that we've included mm-hmm. enough instructions and enough information that the patron will feel successful and feel like it was a good experience having these.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sandra, I said that we keep our library cards current, so we know their address, we know how to contact them, and so it's not as if someone got a library card 15 years ago, never used this again, but they're going to come in and check out this item, and they don't even live here any longer. we're making sure through other processes that library card holders are current, that we do have a relationship with them, that they do use this, and that we have confidence that they'll be responsible.
Mm-hmm.
There was a question. We do not charge for library things. It's just like a library material. It's only there's a cost if it isn't brought back. The late fee on this is $1 a day up to $15 is the max. And I think we're coming soon. I think fiscal's coming soon with a new update on all of our library things, prices, and late fees and all that good stuff. Yeah, all of that will come. Okay. Any other questions?
Okay. I'm curious to see if you tell them.
Yeah. We've had a lot of requests, like, before COVID, like, I want to take this on vacation. And then I think now we're going to have a lot of people doing creative things with it. Like, I'm working on a project or I'm doing something for my new business or something. I think it will be interesting to see who check out on Adobe. And then we'll have a small user survey as well, like to see how things are going and see if there's anybody we can improve the kids as well. We'll with that. So, okay. Okay. Yeah.
Thanks, Sarah. Yeah.
So our next item is display policy.
I'm asking, what was that thing?
All right.
Well, hi, everyone. I'm Amy Winder Newton. I'm the chair of the county council, and I'm here in my own capacity as a council member, but wanted to, first of all, thank you for your service. I got to serve on the library board a few years ago and know a few of you from that, Phil, and it was such a great experience. And what's cool about what you guys do is you actually are policymakers. We have other boards and other committees in the county that maybe advise or whatever, but you guys actually get to make decisions, which is pretty cool. So we appreciate your service, and thanks for what you do. So you can, as you can imagine, in this crazy day and age, we get people who reach out to us as elected officials with complaints or concerns or whatever, and that happened on one such occasion a couple months ago. I had a city council person who reached out and had a complaint, and as I started looking into it, this has nothing to do with her complaint, by the way. She was talking about something different. But I started reading through some of the policies regarding displays. And in the display policy, it says that some material may be controversial. And I thought, gosh, you know, in this day and age where we have government who's using people's tax dollars, maybe we should put in our policy something about we strive not to be controversial, just so that people don't worry about that. And so I've actually recently been on the state on a committee to review their content review policy. And for state agencies, we actually implemented in that policy language that says we strive not to be controversial. And for government, that's probably, in my mind, the right call. Especially where we've gone through some controversy with the recent library tax increase last year. Some of us spent some good political capital defending that, and, you know, some of the other things, cities talking about wanting to do their own libraries and stuff like that. I feel like it's even more important for us to make sure that we're not causing issues in communities. So anyway, so I've been working with Jim and Robin and talking to them a little bit about this, and they crafted what you have before you as some potential changes to the policy. And so I appreciate their support, and I know, and I support you guys being the ones to decide on that policy. And also, if we talk about what's controversial, that would come down to our librarians, our library administration, and you as the board to ultimately make that decision on what's controversial and what's not if it becomes an issue. So anyway, with that, I just wanted to throw this out as what I think is a good policy change, and would love to have your support if you're so inclined. So, thank you.
Thanks, Amy. And let me just say that we have been speaking with Amy and others about this particular policy, and you know, every June kind of comes up, right? And it's June, so here it's come up again. The things in red that you have before you, the majority of that is taken actually from our standard operating procedures. So we have a policy, with the board sets the policy, and then we have certain guidelines for staff and training procedures around. And the items in the first section 1.1 come from our training manual and from our procedures, with the exception of in the first bullet point where it says strives be non-controversial. So that was language that Amy had recommended that we incorporate. As we thought about that, we were concerned about what does that mean, who decides whether it's controversial, or what is there a boundary, or what does that really mean? Amy has assured me that this is really a decision that if they get complaints in the future, I think in the past, the complaints have gone directly to the council and bypass our procedures. And so Amy has assured me that those comments and questions and concerns will be redirected through our policies of reconsideration. So we have not received any complaints about studies. I'm just being frank with you. I think the council has got a couple, but we have not received any formal complaints through our reconsideration policy. I think maybe a couple people yelled at a librarian or a shelver or somebody that was out there, oh, I don't like this, and I don't think you got to have that in there, whatever it is. And so we've always instructed our staff, if there is a complaint, ask them and provide them a copy of the reconsideration policy. Here's how you make the complaint. And if that is then processed through our normal procedures where it goes to the committee to review and they issue their decision, The individual still doesn't like the decision. They appeal that decision to me as the director, or the director. The director then makes a decision. If they still want to contest it, they still are not satisfied with the answer that I provided or the explanation that I provided, they can ultimately appeal to this board as the arbiter and final decider of that. And once that is decided, once you make your decision about what you think should or should not be in the collection, on display, and services that we're offering, and programs that are delivered, and the time, hours of operation, and the, you know, all of the things that statutorily and by county ordinance are empowered within this body, within this board's decision-making authority, then that's the way it will proceed. And Amy's assured me that she's committed to this, that she'll defend it and support the board's decisions as we make those. So with that, I don't know if you have questions, concerns, comments. If you want to talk about that, we'll move. So,
go ahead, Alma. Jim, this is Sandra.
Hi, Sandra.
This is Sandra. Hi. This honestly makes me wish that I wasn't there in person. My immediate reaction, and I guess, you know, I need more time to really think about this, but my immediate reaction is that I think that it actually changes the spirit of the policy in a way that maybe is more likely to lead to more questions and work, whereas the original policy is like, it may be controversial. It's sort of saying, like, we cannot control we're doing our best, but we cannot control what people might be viewing as controversial. And that is defensible as a stance. I think it sides with the librarians and the librarians' choices and really the policy of the library to be a very open space. When we move to, we try to not be controversial, that is already censoring some of the, putting the responsibility on the librarians. And I do feel like whether or not it's implied, it is a little bit of a censorship to the librarians' ability to display the materials that are available in the library. And the materials that are available in the library may be controversial. We can, you know, that's why it's an open library. So I think that if we do change the policy to defend saying we are not trying to be controversial, then we actually have to defend that position over and over and over through the layers of, you know, the board, the librarians, the leadership. I have the sense that it actually gets us into knots that right now we don't have, and I think that the best way to avoid potential issues is to not have them. And I think our current policy allows us to say, you know, it's not that we're trying to stir the pot, we really are not, but they may be controversial to some people. We don't have to explain further than that. If we get into the we're trying not to be controversial, then we have to define what's controversial, and then we have to define who gets to decide that, and we have to define so many other things that I think are, my immediate reaction is that I would not at this point support this policy change.
I guess my question, I mean, this park board does list reconsideration, but do we need to strengthen this language to emphasizing what that process is through library staff?
Yeah, there's a reconsideration policy that we have in place already. I think we're looking at that as well, right, Jen? We're going to bring this. All of these policies come back to the board on a regular basis. Right? So every 3 years, we try to revisit and make sure that the current board is okay with it. So the reconsideration policy is a standing policy that we have that spells out all of those things. Right. So this just refers you, I think, to, hey, if you want to you want to request reconsideration, then locate it.
Well, and so we can,
yeah, and there's a specific form. So the reconsideration form outline. So that's how that operates, and I think that's on our schedule of revisiting policies every 3 to 5 years. Make sure that you're now, Senator, I would agree with you. It does open up perhaps a Pandora's box. The ALF that I see is in 3.0. Do you have a copy of it? Oh, can you read you the change?
I don't.
So it's the current policy, which I think you have seen and we've approved before. He added section 1.1, which is, as a government entity, the library maintains neutrality and strives to present all sides of the topic. Now, these are items that we train our staff around, that this should, we are neutral, and we do strive to present all sides of the topic. Displays should not make a political or polarizing statement, including the inclusion or absence of materials on display. That was in our original procedures, and then at Amy's direction, we added, and strive to be non-controversial, I think, based on what the work she's done at the state. The next bullet is that displays should not promote an agenda, intentionally or unintentionally. So that's, we don't have an agenda. We are a neutral arbiter. And then our collection displays strive to include all viewpoints. So when we train our staff around a display, these are the elements that we train them on. And then the final thing that we've added under section 3.0 of the existing policy, we added a couple of iterations here. The first one is that in the third sentence, third line down, we added, although the county library strives to create displays that are non-controversial. So we're striving to do that. We acknowledge that certain opinions, perspectives, or subject matters included within a material display may include content that some patrons, and we added, do not agree with and find controversial. So originally it read that material displays may include content that some patrons find controversial. So we tried to balance that with that. Even though you may find it controversial, you may not agree with it, we strive for the non-controversial, that they may find things that they don't agree with. So trying to balance that a little bit. So.
Thank you. Thank you for reading that, Jim.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for reading that. And, but, you know, to my point, I feel like we're already doing that, right? Like, the policy itself didn't need further explanation. And with the added striving to be non-controversial, now we're having to actually explain and further explain. So
just on my email, the virtual copy to somebody said, is it? Can I have a copy to do that? Well, I think it meant success. my concern is the term non-controversial. Amy, I wonder, since you put this on a state policy, what do they mean by non-controversial? It seems like that is so subjective. It is a little bit subjective. So, I mean, that's why you have a reconsideration process to go through. And obviously, this doesn't apply to books. We feel controversial.
It's for displays.
It's just for displays. You know, some of the libraries, like my library in Taylorsville, you walk in and they have a big display there for everyone. And so you have children viewing and other people. And so you may have different material there than you would back in the next section. So. And contrary to Jim said June, I'm not bringing this forward because of anything in June. I'm truly, like, for me, it's a policy issue overall, the matter of the month of the year. So just to make that as well. I just have a couple questions. Like, so I noticed in the library, a lot of the displays are just new in fiction, new in nonfiction. These are biographies. How would this policy apply to new materials? Like, there may be something that one patron is like, I can't stand that person that the biography is about. Like, how does that apply the political or non-controversial part with just new materials that are on display.
Good question.
And I have one other question about, well, I don't know if you want me to ask my other question. My other question is, I don't see where it says that the staff and the library board and staff would determine what is considered controversial. So I don't see it in writing. Those are my two questions. No, but specifically, that's a non-controversial.
Yeah.
Did I miss it?
No.
I don't know.
So, I mean, up on the screen is the current selection. It's the current display policy, right?
Right.
So I guess my question is, I mean, we have a display policy that seems fairly comprehensive about how materials are chosen and the auspices under which they're chosen. So I generally just like redundancy when you have two different things that might be kind of in controversy with each other. So I'm just wondering why try to embed the selection of display language in our general policy when we already have a separate display policy that addresses the issue. I mean, and I guess I also have the same concerns about non-controversial. It seems like a lot of the other folks are
with that. Yeah, I think we all have some input here. I think I'm going to mimic a lot what Jenna says. I feel like this language creates problems that don't exist. And we have worked incredibly hard, and the library staff has worked incredibly hard to ensure that there's proper channels when controversy is the buzzword of the day. When people feel potentially like something is problematic, there's a channel that exists that I think is well thought out and well done and well enforced. Seems very broad, very vague. It seems unenforceable. And there's a lot of issues that I have just with this specific language. For example, 1.1 says, as a government entity, the library maintains neutrality and strives to present all sides of a topic. And strives to present is a very absent word, right? I think it's different to say we provide a platform for the marketplace of ideas to take place and resources for people to do their own research, but we're not actually maybe presenting or striving to present that information. Does that make sense? You've got a really big action word that I don't think is actually true whenever you could just say, we maintain neutrality, period. If you want or have questions, we can help you research that or point you in the direction of the tools that we provide to answer those questions.
I think I'm such a you're hitting on what I was concerned with, which is all sides. It's like, who finds what all the sides are?
Yeah,
all the viewpoints are. I just feel like that's a whole lot to.
Right, and those problems kind of tailor through all of the bullet points, right? You go on and it says, include in bullet point one, including the inclusion or absence of materials. The absence of materials on the topic is all of the materials that exist. It's very broad. It doesn't feel enforceable, and it feels like it creates more problems when currently we have a really strong policy for solving those questions.
I guess one question I just with the new, if the policy were different, would we have done anything different the last 6 months? Maybe that's theoretical, but
right.
I mean, our displays, as you saw exhibited here and elsewhere, a lot of it is newer items. And while we control the selection of new materials, there's millions that are published every year. We go through a selection process, which we'll talk a little bit about in the next section. But we look at reviews, we look at popularity. And frankly, for our system, a popular library that only has 2 million items in the collection, right? It's a lot, but it's not everything. And 1 million of those are checked out every month. I mean, we circulate 1 million items every month. So half the collection is in the public's hands. If it's not circulating, it's gone because we don't have the shelf space. And so if it doesn't earn its space on the shelf, then we're not. It's not going to continue to provide that. I mean, we make some mistakes, and there's some stinkers out there that we buy that, nobody wants that, and so we delete it. But yeah, I think we have a good team that select professional librarians that look at a lot of different perspectives and the popularity of materials and what's reviews, if it's well reviewed, is it cost effective for us to purchase it, etc. We get submissions from a lot of authors on self-published works. I mean, I don't know, Krista, you can tell us how many, hundreds, literally. Hey, I just wrote this, and I think you got to carry it in your library, and I'll give it to you for free. It's like, no thanks. And so there's a lot of stuff out there that's published, but we really look at, I think, a very deliberative process for selecting materials and making sure it earns its shelf space. So your question, Steve, would we have done anything differently? I don't think so. I mean, I don't know that our librarians have ever had an agenda, and we train them. Don't put up things that represent your own personal beliefs. You need to represent the community and what the community would be interested in. And this is not your own personal display board. This is a community.
National holidays.
There's national holidays. There's,
Holidays.
Tomato Day. We do things around Valentine's Day. There's a lot of some. I don't know. Amy, you want to speak to this?
Okay, the only thing that I was looking to add in is what was in 3 there, just that little bit. So Jim and the team added that 1.1. I mean, that's not important to me. It's just having a statement that we're trying to not be one still. And we recognize there may be things that are and open. So it is, but I just thought about Steve's team that we are trying to be still. In our displays, and so that's the only piece I personally am struggling about, but 1.1 switching out of English plus math and their edge compounds. So,
no, there's a few attorneys on the board here. I wonder, was that standard embedded with any legal staff at the state? Is there like a legal precedent to be non-contractual?
I don't have that specific.
Okay.
It's my separate review policy.
Yeah, I'm always curious whether there's like a legal precedent to, how this policy or that sort of language is going to apply, or if it's been deemed too vague to make any sense out of, or possibly if there's more
precise.
Thanks, Jim.
Jim?
Yeah, Bill. And one more turn to bring it in.
sorry about that. I honestly think that I also felt uncomfortable with the initial language that came across. It I felt it pretty strong and creates more problems than it solves. My initial thought is that we're really trying to say three things. That first one is that we don't seek to promote anybody's political or other agendas. Number two, that we're we have a selection policy that tries to be popular and may include items or displays or other things that people might disagree with. And number three is that if you disagree with something or feel offended or whatever it is, that there's a reconsideration policy. And please go there. And so I think we could do a lot by simplifying this to make it so it sort of lines up with those three principles in order to, one, prevent, further issues from coming up in the future, but definitely softening some of the language here.
So, Bill, I have a question for you. Just following up. I like how you framed that. We're neutral, that the selection is, we have a policy for that that's based upon what's popular, and the third one that we follow the reconsideration policy. I'm curious, if 1.1 were absent, do we still have those three things here? And it seems we do. That's what I see, but that's just my opinion.
I agree. I think, in fact, 3.2, I think it was on the sheet that I saw, that, it really says that we're not endorsing anything. We're not trying to, promote an agenda. So I think that's one section that I'd highlight there as being important, that But yeah, 1.1 I think felt went a little bit over, but yeah.
It sounds like it just opens up more boxes than we are prepared to.
And we're already declaring that we're neutral. Yeah. That means we're not controversial.
I don't think that it does. I just, yeah, only because the government does a lot of things that are controversial all the time, right? Like, and they've been, and I don't, the library displays aren't necessarily doing that, but that's an act of government to promote equality and freedom of speech and democracy. So I don't think that you can say that we are non-controversial when monumental things happen all the time that are quite controversial in order to support the library's mission overall, right? I think that Bill's right. If you just add it's non-political, it's a neutral thing, we have a board, and if you disagree or have a question like you've like heard, here's the process of how to do that.
Great.
So where does that take us?
It's your board. So this is the policy that was presented. You can adopt it, not adopt it, amend it, tell us to go apply height. I mean,
does 3.2 stating that?
I believe it does.
Holly, I would propose that we take this to another meeting and have some like discussion about like the language on this one, so that we can, you know, get our thoughts sort of like written down and maybe like do some rewrites on it before we make a vote on accepting this one.
I would second that idea. I would feel a lot more comfortable if I had the document in front of me with the ability to look at the language more closely and, you know, look at some edits and further discussion.
And maybe there's a few more words in there that we're not using non-controversial language. We're using other language to kind of get...
Or the language of 3.2.
Or the language of 3.2, yes. And then if we wait for another meeting, all you legal minds... you legal minds. You know, I don't feel more comfortable doing that if we're taking a vote right now.
So we have a... Bill has proposed that we push it to another meeting, center the second, and that's an issue. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
I do have one more comment. In fact, I would have a health distance. I hope that people are, they have an issue with this bringing it to us and not bothering you guys. We get bothered about all kinds of
I
don't want to bother more, though. We need to do a better job, and I've actually talked to some of my colleagues on this. We need to do a better job before we meet. This is actually the excuse to go.
There is a process.
Yeah, and send them through the process. So I'm going to push that with the whole council.
That would be
terrific. Better job with that. And then I do get feedback from one council member that they send more reports. Some librarians, when they are trying to just resolve them there, and aren't necessarily giving them the direction for those to be official complaints. So I would see if we can do better with that, too. And then that way we're sending everybody to the same. That would be awesome.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Thanks, Cindy.
Wonderful.
Thank you guys for me today.
Yeah. Thanks, Amy.
Thank you. So our next item is material selection.
Yes. And Melissa has a little PowerPoint. So unrelated to this, maybe it's related, I don't know.
There's just one of the board if it's going to be controversial.
Yeah. The council has invited me to present to them what the policies and processes are around our material selection. So I believe this is going to be scheduled on a future agenda. July 11th is kind of the target date that I've been asked to present, but I haven't gotten a formal invitation yet. It's just a couple of council members. Hey, we need to bring Cooper in. Tell us how the heck they do this. And I'm happy to do that. I'm going to bring my team of the people that really know with me so they can answer the questions, Kristen and Matt and whoever else. But we will then present information to the council around, at least from the 30,000-foot level, you know, how we go about this. So the first thing, if you want to advance, I want to remind the council that we're a popular focus library. So we buy material that people want. And so we're not out there buying textbooks for a small population. We're not out there trying to be an archival library of all LDS materials. We have other libraries and research libraries and some wonderful academic libraries. And so really our role is, hey, people want GoPros. Oh, okay. Great, that's a good idea, and we think we can provide that. And we have a lot of material in our collection, and so we're looking at a variety of interests and backgrounds on, you know, over 900,000 people that we're trying to provide materials to. So we choose it based on popularity, and like I said, it earns its shelf space. It's got to have, yeah, it's varying levels, and some people like romance, and some people like westerns, and some people like sci-fi, and some people like historical fiction. So it's really all over the map, right? So we're trying to accommodate a large population on a popular library collection, and the branches do select some material. So we have central selectors that select the majority of like new materials that are published. But branches also have some ability and a budget in order to select materials that are maybe unique to their current demographic. And so we do try to meet some of those individual needs, and not all 2 million items cannot be at Mill Creek, because guess what? Your collection size is 125,000 items. Can't squeeze a lot more in there. And so we look at what's checking out here, and we provide the materials that are interesting to Mill Creek population. Everything's available on hold through our catalog and through our delivery system. So we do tailor some to individual communities and a lot of popularity throughout the valley. So next slide. And then the second thing I want to emphasize to the council is that, hey, we're an award-winning library. Just in the last 6 months, we have been recognized by the Urban Library Council for a program that Matt and his team delivered called Let's Be Neighbors. And this is an opportunity for people to collaborate and talk about issues that are interesting to them. So we won a ULC Innovation Award around that. We won a People First Award from TechLogic around our buildings and services and being a popular library and connecting to communities and building buildings that are not Taj Mahal, which one of the council members likes to describe some of our buildings. These are people palaces. This isn't my own library. This is the people's property. And we want to provide welcoming spaces for the people, and we won an award for that. We also won an award from the Utah Library Association for Distinguished Service, which is like the highest honor that ULA can provide to bestow on an individual. And this is for Wanda, who's actually over our intellectual freedom committees, and as well, she's been a wonderful service member, won Librarian of the Year when she worked at the jail, so she spent a lot of time a distinguished representative of our system. The other one that I'm very proud of is that ULA recognized Alexis Lira as an outstanding staff member, not a librarian. So the first one is kind of reserved for librarians. There's Librarian of the Year, Distinguished Service. This is for a clerical staff. So Alexis goes above and beyond the call of duty for helping out patrons and solving problems and being frontline trainer for others, a role model, really, for our
library.
So Alexis is at West Jordan. He's been, and he really goes, he fills in for all of our branches. When there's an emergency, he's like the first guy to raise his hand and say, I'll help you out. He's really fabulous. And then finally, we are just recognized by NACO, the National Association of Counties, as the best category in library services. I mean, that's pretty huge when you think of all the libraries in the nation and applications to NACO for awards. We got the best in category for library services. There's other categories, but the best in category is like the cream of the crop. So we're award-winning. We do some really good stuff, and the public appreciate it. And so next slide. Enough said about that.
So our popular process is being acknowledged
nationally. So, in advance.
Oh, second one, too.
There we go. So again, I had mentioned that we have 2 million items in the collection. So that's a pretty good sized collection. That's possible because we're a branch system. And of those 2 million items, 1 million are out every month. So it is the turnover rate. Every book in our system is read 6 times a year. And you think about a 3-week checkout with extensions and so forth, that's a lot of turnover. And I had mentioned that there's a lot of books published. We only buy like less than 10% of all the books that are published. So there's a lot of things out there that we don't buy that's not popular, that's not being requested by our public. And again, we focus on high quality materials, and so they have to meet a certain standard. So there's reviews, there's multiple reviews that we look at, and they're award winning in certain categories, we'll purchase those. So we really try to tailor that for a broad community that represents a variety of interests and perspectives.
Hey, Jim, can I ask a question? I know it's a little outside the scope of adding stuff to the collection, but it says you add approximately 45,000 items each month. How many items do you think you retire each month?
About the same.
About the same.
Yep. So for every item that we purchase, we probably delete
kind of a one-in, one-out policy.
Yes. Our collection doesn't really grow. It's been 2 million items for a decade. Not a decade, but it's been, for the last many years, it's been about 2 million items. And that's capacity, really. You can't squeeze in a lot more. And we haven't really built new buildings. We added, expanded some services in different areas. Most of that was around create space, meeting room space. The collections didn't grow all that much. We did add Daybreak, and so that did add about 120,000 items or so. But when you look at a 2 million item collection, you look at
that. But that includes digital items as well, right?
Includes digital items.
So, I mean, in theory, that's an area where things could potentially be expanded.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. Next. For the selection process, our trained librarians, professional librarians, we have a group that are selectors and then also in the branches, but we train them to represent multiple viewpoints, and before they decide on purchasing something new, they may consult the genre specialist. And so if they're looking at popular materials, newly published materials, hey, what do you think about this genre? Westerns. Or you have, you know, romance is your specialty. What would you recommend and get advice from other, not central selectors, but the other staff that read broadly in those particular areas? And I can't read every question.
I'm just sorry. I'm just curious, how does one become a genre specialist?
They like that particular genre. So they read a lot of it, and they...
So is it just individuals on the staff that people know this person's really into Western, so we're going to ask them about Western?
So they're subject matter experts,
yeah.
And they go to trainings, and they develop an expertise around that. And so you have to remember, librarians go to graduate school to become librarians,
right.
But within the context of that, they can specialize in genres and different types. So some of them specialize in youth, or
yeah.
Teens. For adults, and then within that, we can specialize as well.
Mm-hmm. Chris, do you want to add anything to that? Or?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Maybe I missed it, but is there any non-staff person on the collection?
No.
All staff?
Yeah, these are professional librarians. This is what they're trained to do. This is what their world revolves around. So, yeah. And again, for things that they haven't read, because we can't read everything, they do rely heavily on professional reviews. Yeah. Next. And we do try to maintain neutrality. So with that many cardholders, 900,000 people in our service area, 600,000 cardholders, it really is, the penetration is almost every household. We're looking at changing some of the metrics around cardholders to really what is the household, because we know that many households may have multiple individuals within it, but mom controls the library card. So, you know, mom and the older brother control, you know, all the gifts. So there may be one card at that household, but we really do have good penetration. So with that many cardholders out there, that many households that are being served, it is a huge spectrum of interest and viewpoints and cultures and traditions. So we really do try to avoid infringing on First Amendment, where there are certain rights that we think are important for people to be able to choose their own materials. So we strive for that. And we know that not every item is best for every reader. And the best example, I'd say, is what we passed as we were walking past the young adult area. There was a gentleman there with his child, and they're looking at books together. And we think that that's the best interaction you can have. A parent working with a child to select materials that's appropriate for them and their particular interests. Whether it's LGBTQ, whether it's in dinosaurs, or they have an interest in whatever. Yeah, I mean, there's so many things. The parent is really the one, and this picture also simplifies that, where you have a family together at the library. And in fact, we have a unattended child policy where we, although it's hard to enforce, we discourage children under the age of 12 to be at the library unaccompanied. We know that that happens sometimes and it's unavoidable, but really, we strongly encourage parents to be with their child when they come to the library so they find materials that they approve of and they are appropriate, they are comfortable with. So, next. And as far as the location of materials and where they're housed and where they're shelved, we use nationally recognized cataloging systems, Dewey Decimal for our nonfiction, for our fiction collection. It's by author and title, and so it's really pretty standard, and it's actually identified by the publisher on certain recommended ages, and so there is a certain audience. This is appropriate for 8 to 12-year-olds. This is appropriate for 5 to 6-year-olds, and we do have reading lists for grade levels, and so kindergarten, preschool, kindergarten, first grade, second grade, third grade, we have reading lists that individual family or patron can come up and ask for, do you have a reading list for kindergartners? Or, just like that, yes, first grade, send anybody. And we also have a reading list for, one thing I'll invite your attention to is that there's a reading list for gentle readers.
I saw that out there.
And so we have people say, oh, I was reading this and it had a swear word in it. But, you know, a lot of books kind of do that. But if that offends you, if you think you're going to be offended, here's an entire reading list of gentle reads that won't have swear words, doesn't have sex, doesn't have anything in there that you might find salacious or whatever.
Is that new? We've had
gentle reads forever.
I didn't notice it for sure. Okay.
So, yeah. So gentle reads is very popular.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I
mean, how's that?
I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
If I could just throw in from my experience advising different county agencies over the years, I think there's a distinction between when a member of the public interacts with a governmental agency like Parks and Rec or the library. There's a difference between being offended and being not attacked, but threatened. So you do have the right to come in and not be threatened by library staff, but I would say everybody gets offended probably 10 times a day. Turning right in front of you.
Right, parking lot.
And so there's just no right not to be offended by something. Nice.
Again, that a book earns its place on the shelf. It must be checked out. Circulation matters. So that's one of the things that we look at when we get a reconsideration request. How many times is this checked out? Well, you don't like it, but there's a lot of people out there that apparently like this that are checking it out. And so if it's continuing to be checked out, circulation matters. We'll continue to provide that for the individuals that want that. If you don't want it, fine. We do and have moved materials in different parts of the collection, from nonfiction to fiction or from YA to adult, but that happens pretty rarely because we really rely on the cataloging and publisher recommendations. So it doesn't happen very often, but it has happened. And then again, parents and their guardians are ultimately responsible for their children's use of the library. So when they say, oh, my son went to the anatomy section and pulled out a book that was in the anatomy section and opened it up on page 53, it said this. Well, should really be involved in the child and, you know, is the anatomy section really in the nonfiction where they wanted to be, or were they in the picture books? And you said, oh, look at this. Anyway. So location does matter, and we do provide as well as we can the catalog and location within the space. Material selection policies, so we have a defined policy that you've approved multiple times. Popular library, all types of differing social, religious customs and languages, represents a variety of viewpoints and subjects. It's not appropriate for everybody. We get that, but we do look at different criteria and try to tailor that for the suitability of intended audiences. And then our display policy, we have lots of displays, as we just saw in here at Mill Creek. They exist really for merchandise and selection. It's not to push any agenda or anything. It's like, oh, hey, here's books on heroes. This is the example that's up there. And so we really do try to highlight certain things, new arrivals in particular, but we don't have an agenda, and we're not trying to push any particular agenda. We do celebrate different cultural events or happenings within the community. If it's Lunar New Year, we may have Asian material out there. If it's Cinco de Mayo, we may have Hispanic materials out there. So, you know, different things. Pride Month, we may have some pride display. But it's, you know, appropriate, and we get a lot of comments about how well that's received and how much they appreciate having that material available for us. That's. And this was, I believe, one of the complaints, as I understand it, that the council received, that the information books that were on display at Sandy were, I think in this gentleman's opinion, pushing an agenda, and they were, there's a certain percentage that represented a woke perspective. And so I asked the branch manager from Sandy, when this came to my attention, maybe a month later or whatever, I said, hey, Darren, go take a picture of the display wall on what we're talking about. So first of all, I want to apologize for the display because it looks kind of bad.
Yeah.
A lot of books have been checked out. But the other thing is it says information books, and really what this is, you see it in the corner, it says new books. So it's new books, and information is really nonfiction. So we're looking at rebranding this to say new arrivals are nonfiction, or, you know, something that's more appropriately titled. But this is really what it is. This display is new arrivals of nonfiction books. And so on there, I don't know that you can blow it up very well, but there's a ton of different things that I wouldn't necessarily categorize as woke or pushing any particular agenda, from Julie Andrews as a biography up to there's a
term woke is less definable than the non-controversial.
there's also information about I think there's horsemanship, and there, you know, there's a whole bunch of non-fiction titles, Gravity Matters. The tree book, and there's a lot that are checked out, and so.
Right. I'm going to defend information books as a title because this is the children's section.
Oh yeah.
And a lot of parents don't know what nonfiction means, and so you're trying to break it down. These are books that have information in it. So I think that's a okay title for up there.
And that's going to be marketing's. I've talked to Sarah. Is there a different way we can gussy this up a little bit? And so she's going to, you know, work on that. And I would also apologize. Sandy is on our list of huge remodels, so that's also.
So Sandy's my home library.
Yeah.
And I set out more books in the kids' section in Sandy than probably anybody else. 10 books a week. And the rule is that we get 2 books from this exact display every time that we go. And they're, you're going to get a huge gamut of different options every time that display, and they're all very cool, they're all very new, and they're all, I don't know, like, they're great, and we get 2 books every time, and I love that display.
Great.
So,
okay. Well, I'll let Darren know, because I looked at it, so, that looks kind of shabby.
Yeah.
But it's because people have checked out a lot of times.
They're touching it. They're looking at it.
Yeah, they're so busy there. It's hard to develop them.
So, and I can assure you that there is not an agenda.
Because the implication is that a shelver is walking by and trying to select books, but they're really just trying to
get books off the cart.
That's very true. And I think that may be the end of the... Oh, finally, there is a reconsideration process that we receive very few reconsideration requests, frankly, that people go through the process of saying, I don't agree with this, and I fill out the form. They may complain to the shelter that's there. But anyway, we do have a process. We have a team of individuals that conduct an in-depth review of it, make sure that it meets the policy that you've adopted. They look at whether it's in the right age range and collection and so forth, and then make a decision, and then that process can be appealed to me and then ultimately appealed to you.
Would it be possible to have like the lead for the consideration, reconsideration, or appeal be sent to all of us?
I'll do that too.
Sure. Yeah. And then we'll revisit it probably in the next couple months. By the end of the year, we'll bring that back to the board and say, does this still meet what you think we ought to be doing? And we can reaffirm that.
And by link, I mean the link that we could share with a patron.
We just want a new board members. They do an amazing presentation about the reconsideration.
So I can definitely bring that back to the board, and we can kind of go over it. It just explains the process, but it involves. So
I do caution us. You know, we push back the display policy for the next board meeting, and also I think the reconsideration is a good one to bring at the next board meeting. Welcome. We canceled July because it conflicted with Pioneer Day. But we canceled July, and so our next board meeting will be in August.
Just a question. What can we do to help you? Are you going to take this to the county council?
They've asked me
like, the support you need. Is something we can do?
I don't know what the expectation is, and so I think with more information, I'm going to ask staff to come with me.
Section.
I don't know, Suzanne. You're on the council, so I don't know if you've heard anything about what.
I think it's always great to have a couple board members there with you. I mean, not necessarily may or may not speak, but I think it's.
Yeah.
I think it hurts.
Let us know.
Okay. So, I don't know. We haven't done the scheduling, or you haven't attended the scheduling of the council meetings for
it's
July yet.
It's too far up. It's not in the process yet. Not until next week.
And I've just heard rumors that, oh, we want you to come and speak to the council. So, I'm ready.
Part of the July 11th request also had to coincide with this display policy, but since you postponed the decision around the display policy, there might be an inclination to just postpone the presentation as well. So I think that's a conversation we had with the individuals that are requesting it. Let's see.
I think it would be wise to have some board members there because I don't know what else might be on that agenda as well.
Then let us know.
And finally, we think we do live up to our mission of making a positive difference in the lives of our community and offer great materials. And I think it's recognized nationally as well as locally. That pretty good job. Yes, sir.
Maybe we should do the reconsideration policy training at the council.
Yeah, that may be part of, that could be part of it.
So then they're able to advocate for the process when they get complaints. If they understand what the process is, then they can represent that to their constituents.
Just more work for Kristen.
She can send it amazing.
Amazing.
You can tell.
She's more amazing now.
Hi. Jen.
Here I am.
Here you are.
So I promised you at the last board meeting that I would give you an update on where we are in the Sunday service pilot. So we had our – so just to give you a background, if you missed the whole story, when we got our tax increase last year, one of the things that came up in that conversation is, do we want to expand to services on Sundays at any of our branches? And so we did put some money in our long-range plan to accommodate a pilot for that and then, you know, increasing amounts if we need to. And we engaged a class from the University of Utah. It's a public policy data analysis class to do a project for us to look at, you know, if we were going to do Sunday, then where would we do that and when would we do it? What would the hours be? So that's kind of the backstory. We had eight branch managers from around the county participate on a work group that advised the class to make sure that they were considering the things that we wanted them to consider. They gave their recommendation to that work group, and the work group, you know, accepted some of it, made some changes, and then we presented that to the leadership team, got approval to go forward on the pilot, and now we're trying to figure out next steps. So if you go to the next slide. So this is the recommendation that the class made. And what they looked at was basically like door count, number of people coming in. They looked at nearby parks, how busy are they, recreation centers, you know, what ones are open on Sundays, what's going on with them. They looked at lots of different things. We did ask them to exclude a couple of branches because we knew that they were just not, they're too populated. Like, for instance, this location, for the reasons that Laura said earlier, you know, it just really isn't on the table. So the branches that they suggested are Kearns, West Jordan, Whitmore, and Sandy, based entirely on their, you know, like store count and all of those kinds of things, busyness. Then they also suggested Granite, Kern, Sandy, and South Jordan based on geographic coverage to give, you know, the biggest coverage that we have. I think these are, I want to say they're 5-mile circles. And so the group looked at that, and we really appreciated all of their data because that helped us think about how, you know, the different branches are being used and how best to get our coverage of our area. And so what we ended up deciding, and I don't know if the circles didn't show my phone, but I hope you can, when if you go to the next slide. Oh, my circles did come through. So what we ended up going with was Granite, Kearns, West Jordan, and Daybreak. And then, you know, I'll talk a little bit about this circle in a second. So you'll notice that Kearns was one that they suggested. We agree because that is, you know, the center of that community. It's a great location for it. Hits that West Side group. Granite, I can't remember if that was on the original one. Granite
based was Daybreak. On, particularly, it was on geographically, but not
right.
So new it happened.
Right. And so when they were looking at the data, they were looking at current data. Granite and Daybreak are so new that they're still building their audience, and so we included them because they're already growing. We see the upward trend. The location is great. They both have Create services as well as Kearns, and we wanted to make sure the Create services were available on Sundays, and then public transportation where they are with accessibility is why those two were added. And then West Jordan was added because it's same reason, public transportation, central, that park is crazy busy on Sunday. And then we were only able to choose four libraries. We didn't end up choosing the suggested Whitmore or Sandy because, I mean, they'd be great, but we're hoping to do major construction projects there soon. And so we don't want to go through this whole pilot to start a new service, you know, and then close in 6 months. That does really skew our coverage of the valley, you know, to the west side. But we felt like West Jordan is fairly close. Granite is fairly close. This would be Sandy, Whitmore, or possibly Draper would be a grade 6 library when we get to that point. We know it's a high priority. We just, right now, we've got $400,000 to do this. And so we picked, you know, these four, with Draper being a fourth place on them, if we can't end up doing a fourth. So the other thing was that we were looking at a five-hour span of hours, and 11 to 4 would probably be the busiest time based on our Saturday service and the city's Sunday service. But 10 to 3 would be nicer because it kind of, you know, we already open at 10 on every day, so that's kind of nice. It doesn't really matter. That is a next year's problem because this year's problem is figuring out how many full-time equivalents we need, how many staff we need to hire to do this. And so for a five-hour day, regardless of where those 5 hours end up being, you know, the staffing will be the same either way. So if you go to the next slide, you can see the finances. We have looked into scheduling and how that fits into the larger schedule and what we would need to hire to make this happen. So you can see that, you know, we've got customer service specialist, a 20-hour person, two 20-hour LAs, one of which would be a create station specialist, create space specialist. And then one would be more of an information desk specialist. Different branches need different things based on whether or not they have the current staffing to already accommodate this or, you know, what they would need. West Jordan doesn't need a Create LA because we don't have a Create space. We looked at what else we would need to do. We would need to do more custodial service. We have contracted with RBM, which is a custodial company, to cover Day Rig, Granite, and Kearns already. So this is how much it would cost to just add Sundays to our contract for them, probably, for estimating. We do not have that contract with West Jordan, and so if we were to add 20 or 10 hours to our custodial staff there, which we could do, they have a part-timer, then that would be how much it would cost. So that's not ideal, obviously, but, you know, something that we need to figure out. And then we're assuming we're going to need more toilet paper. We're assuming we're going to need more toner. For the computers, we don't know what it's going to do to utilities, so we made some.
Why is Kearns utilities so much better?
Oh, that's fabulous! Because as Russ made sure, because I was like, "Are you sure about this?" They have geothermal heat, and so they don't have the heating and fuel costs that the other branches have. So anyway, that's the totals. It ends up being more than our 400,000 that we had allocated, which is part of the reason why I'm not sure if we can do day rake. But I also think that the estimates on the staffing are a bit high because we base them on the middle of the salary range. And I'm sure that we'll hire more people at the start of the salary range, so that would bring those costs.
Why does day rake increase the FTE amount so differently? It looks like it's a
little. So the difference is that day rake is currently a little, let's see. Oh, the cost? Yeah. Daybreak is a little overstaffed on CSS already, customer service specialist, and so we're just going to repurpose something we pulled aside. So rather than requesting a whole new activity for them, we can use what we have in the bank. Same thing with Granite. They have some in the bank, too. So, all right. Well, I think so. Would I have any other slides?
One more.
Oh, what's next? So we're getting together our request for a new staff. We'll need to put that together and get that submitted for this 2024 budget process. And we need to refine our estimates. That was us just being like, well, I don't know how much toilet paper you think would be. our coverage models, figuring that out, as well as cross-branch staffing options. We have a lot of people at other branches who would love to work Sundays. And then we have people at the Sundays branches who just do not. And so creating a system that can allow people to volunteer to come in and get those shifts, I think everybody will appreciate. And then we need to talk about our marketing plan and how to communicate this to the public and roll it out. So we're really looking at, hopefully, a summer 2024 rollout. But it's really too early to say at this point. So I think that's it. Any questions?
I have a comment and a question, but I just think it'll be a game changer for families that still have education.
Yeah, it was a very, I mean, that was the original impetus for this, was that we did get responses on our patron surveys saying that they want us to expand hours. It is anecdotally one of the most popular days at the city library, at Weber County. It's pretty common, and it's kind of a Sunday activity, right? A leisure activity, coming to the library with your family. So I think it'll be popular. So it's a big change for us. We're figuring it out, but I think it's a good one. So if this is successful in 2026, we have money set aside to double it to 8 branches, and then in 2028, we would have money set aside to do the whole system, if it's successful. But, of course, that's way in the future, and we'll see if that's where we want to head.
What do you think success would look like?
Functional, for one. You know, if everything's working right and we're able to staff it and we've got the right staffing levels and it's, you know, it's working out. We haven't come across any unforeseen problems that we can't solve. And then I would say looking at door count. You know, is the door count really worth, I mean, do we have enough people coming in that is comparable to our other service times? And if not, you know, is it worth having these hours or not? Because we're paying all these people to be on the floor and to be open. So if it's dead, then, you know, maybe we're in the wrong location or the wrong hours, or maybe people just don't really want Sundays after all. We evaluate that stuff, like, monthly. So, like, we're always looking at that stuff, for sure. We do. We like our data. So, any other questions or concerns? Crazy, yeah. And we do have some staff that are really upset about this, I'll tell you. So I know of at least two staff members who feel like this is a major problem for them. So we are working to create opportunities for them that will help them feel better, like offering transfers or, you know, like I said, getting the cross-branch support or whatever. We don't want to make people work Sundays if they really don't plan. So we're working on it. Okay, thanks.
Well, it's 2:30. It's your pleasure. You have this statistical report, you know, 1 million checkouts, got almost 4,000 new patrons that registered. Our day count continues to increase, recovering from COVID. So all metrics are on the uptick, and we think that we're continuing to serve the Valley very well, and children's materials rule. So. Sarah is not with us, so let's skip over that. Matt, did Sarah have anything for
us other than outcomes? I could just say the ones I'm trying to think so far we haven't heard any negativity about, so it's going well. And we'll report again. So. Alexis, who also had a special earlier, was very helpful in talking to the ones I'm trying to think as well. So that's just another added value that our staff is trying to see.
Unless she's not here, finances are in good shape. So. Oh, Russ is here, though.
Oh, yeah. Three comments.
There you go.
One is our June budget got approved, and the highlight of that is in the branch for the library is that we got an increase in the utility budget.
For gas.
And it was a countywide problem where it wasn't driven by usage, but cost per decatherm. And so we got $160,000 increase. Some of our branches were already negative through May, and this helped us. And the second thing is we're starting the 24 budget process now. We're getting information. The branches submitted a request for scrubbing forward.
So if I give a shout-out, one of the reasons that we were able to get such a big payback on the gas is because of the work Russ did. It didn't impact with the division of proper development, where it did help us see impact those increases.
Yes. John. Emily, you want to say anything? Or?
So the numbers are in there.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Rebecca.
Enjoy your summer.
Yeah, thanks, you guys.
Thank you.
Indeed.
And thanks, Sandra. And Bill, thank you, Bill, for us. And thanks, Bill. Thank you.
Good comments.
Melissa, do I just push stop?